take a look at this week's property news with our property expert, Joe Joshi.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning to all our viewers and listeners. I think we're going to have some technical issues today by the sounds of things. It
What's
just
that?
Keeps on cutting out, so apologies in advance. I don't know. It just seems to be, you know, Dalek at the moment, but I'm sure it'll sort itself out shortly.
Well, fingers crossed. We've had worse situations, let's be fair. We'll cope, I'm sure. here's the first story this week. And we've never really talked about the new model or the way that the estate agency business is developing and evolving with technology. And there's an interesting story this week about the market share of hybrid agents, which we'll come on to in a second, which has continued to decrease throughout last year with exchanges amongst this sector dropping to 5.2% in the first quarter of this year from 6.5% this time last year. Data provided by 20EA found that hybrid agents, their share of the market has trended lower since the high of 8.2% of exchanges in 2019. However, self-employed agents have continued to gain momentum and accounted for 34% of new instructions in the first quarter of this year across all hybrid agents, up from 25% in the last period. In total, hybrid agents launched 5% of all new instructions in this first quarter, compared with 5.9% in the first quarter of 23. That's a drop of 15%. But that hides the gains made by self-employed agents. They launched 1.7% of all new instructions in the first quarter of this year, up from 1.4%, which is a rise of 18% in last year. The findings are part of the latest property and home mover report from data insights specialist 20CI. The report compares 24 data in the first quarter with the same quarter last year. It defines self-employed agents as those without a physical branch, usually working under the umbrella names such as EXP, Keller Williams and IAD. So interesting to see that the self-employed agents are getting a bit more business and those hybrid agents are diminishing. And I suppose it's really probably a good point to actually discuss what a hybrid agent is. And that's really a mixture, isn't it, of having an actual accepted branch operation, but also an online offering too.
It is a subject we've touched on in the past, but I think it's good to always clarify what these these titles actually mean: hybrid estate agents, and self-employed and brokers, etc. So, of course, the traditional estate agency was an estate agency devised by the fact that you've got a branch and you've got a number of member of staff that are employed. Right the way from trainee up to manager, director levels, and utilizing their expertise and experience of the local market. This is how it began. In fact, to wind the story right back to history, to give you an indication, the original estate agents actually were the undertakers. So when somebody passed away, they used to deal with the estate. And so the very, very original estate agency concept came through the undertakers, and then the undertakers ultimately opened up as estate agencies, and estate agency was born, which is, you know, hundreds of years ago. The original traditional estate agent is an estate agent that obviously has a high street branch or a branch somewhere with a team of employed staff, and obviously providing a service. It was more localized back in the days because it was, you know, local to that particular area. Before the world of internet and newspapers and all sorts of other things came along, it was really about the knowledge of that particular town. And it was, going back when I started, it was people used to actually physically travel to the town to visit an estate agent, sit with them, discuss all of the requirements, go and drive around the town, understand the area, take their A to Z, no Google Maps or anything like that. lots of arguments on route about the right turns and the left turns and whether we missed the turning and all that kind of stuff that used to happen. And of course, turning up outside, which is, the first impressions that made all the difference to the areas that they wanted. So there was a way of life that existed. And it was actually an integral part of the community as well, because you were involved in that community. Estate agents were involved in that community. They relied on those people to provide instructions and obviously references and reliability. Of course, the hybrid came much, much later, but in between all of that, we became online. Now, online, to a large extent, means that we were actually on the World Wide Web, as it started out as, www. And that meant that everybody was theoretically now online. It was a new wave, a new way of dealing with property. And people thought, you know, I've got to go to an agent that has an online presence through their website or through the internet. And in between the traditional and the internet was newspaper advertising. So newspaper advertising was huge. You know, you had to have your newspapers, cut out pictures, and, you know, back to the newspaper provider, make sure that all the things were right. The proofs came back, the proofs went forward, and it just went on and on and on. It was almost like a task for one person in the office back in the day, that they had to, you know, get the Polaroid camera out and make sure that the pictures were right. So, you know, it's evolved as time has gone on to what we have now is what we call new titles for the business. So when newspapers came along, it was very much the case of getting to the papers first, whoever got to the papers first. And I remember, you know, bundles used to arrive at 4 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. And if I'd got there first on a Thursday morning, normally found that half the bundles were missing because somebody has taken them early because they want to make sure that nobody else got them. So subsequently, they had to be put under security after a while, because people used to just come in and chuck them in the back of their car, take the one piece that they wanted and chuck the rest in the nearest bin, so nobody else could find that they got another property in that area. So, you know, there was a little bit of skullduggery about how they got to their deal first, quickly flick through and make the phone call and so. So then came along the www.internet world, and so people like Rightmove and others came along and started to put properties on the market through the internet, and that killed, to a large extent, the newspaper. Followed by the hybrid estate agent. The hybrid estate agent became an estate agent that obviously had online presence, maybe a branch, and had people out there sort of wandering around and trying to do the deals that they can. That really came in where people like Purple Bricks came in and demolished the market. And we've had many before them and probably many after them that will continue to try to do that. As hybrid is concerned. So I'm going to leave it there because I know you've got some questions. I can see you're fumbling forward to say, you know, shut up and let me tell me something else. So far away, and I'll wrap up that. You can see this will be a pet subject of mine, so we'll be fine with this, Paul.
Do you know, that brought back so many memories, actually, having worked in that side of the business, the marketing side with newspapers and so on, of people nicking the bundles. I'd forgotten all about that, but you're absolutely right. That did used to go on. And talking about these hybrid agents, the lines are blurred because there's a lot of online agents who claim to be hybrid because they offer a service that the high street agent does, but without the overheads of a physical office. And conversely, there's some high street agents that claim to be hybrid because they have a website, but they don't necessarily offer all the services that the online does. And in most cases, you have to have a proper, to be a true hybrid, you have to have a proper branch network or certainly a singular office, and you have to be able to provide the ability to put your house on the market completely online. That's, as I understand it, the definition of a hybrid agent. You have to be able to go fully online and be able to offer that, or fully through a branch, and only then can you be considered a true hybrid. But I guess the point we want to get to is, isn't it interesting, though, that even that model, which you'd think would be the perfect opportunity, is not actually the one that people are largely turning to. They're turning to the self-employed agent. So let's just unwrap that a little bit. What's your thoughts on that?
To go back to that, which is why I actually paused to let you have your question, that what's happened is that it's gone back to the original state, Paul. That's what's happened. And that's what the agency business is about. It's about people and personalities and places. So your hybrid estate agent now, who is a self-employed estate agent, is an agent that is a market expert to some extent in their own patch. And so, which is, if you wind back the tape from what I just said earlier on, it was like you had to be a local agent who had involvements in the community, you lived in that area, you understood that particular patch. And we have now done a complete cycle. now to find that we have agents in that specific area that may be familiar with that, which are integrated in the community, but now they work on their own. They don't have to have the overheads, because the way the technology has happened, you now have the ability to be online through portals such as On the Market, Zoopla, Rightmove, etc. You have the possibility to be online through your own website that you might create, or through a franchise operation that you might tie into, like you said, the EXP and other such operators. But it gives that person the individuality to be the master of their destination, of their area. They know their movements and so forth. So that's where that has come, complete cycle to having the local independent agent who now operates under an umbrella or has the www.presence, the World Wide Web presence. And that exists for everybody. So when they say online, to be honest with you, every one of us is online. There's no secret about being online, because every agent that needs to exist needs to be online. But it just became a terminology when you went out to sell to someone. You say, well, we're online, you know, we're so cool, we're online. And that's how it became, you know, famous. And online became almost a domain on its own, as you can buy things like now, you know, joejoshionline.com or something like that. You know, you could do, everything became online as a way of marketing going forward. So hybrid estate agency is an interrupting agency, but to be honest with you, a complete and utter waste of time that has existed. And we've seen agents, Purple Bricks is a prime example that came into the market, you know, rushed in, everybody thought this is the way forward, cheapest, cheerful. And what happened to them was, you know, the two guys that made the money originally had a very nice time, good time out of it. And of course, it's now was sold to Strike for £1. And it won't be that long before Strike will be on the same table as what Purple Bricks was, because it's just not a workable model. It's just what the city buys. They buy this newness, this concept of, yeah, this is going to happen. But ultimately, our business is based on the persons, the personality, the local knowledge, the people that they talk. And that's why independent local agents are absolutely thriving, because people want someone that they can talk to. They don't want to talk to, you know, the computer and the computer says no. They want to talk to someone who says, you know what, this is what you got to do. This is the avenue. This is the way the market. Yes, there is now so much data available. Some people even go to the point where they say, actually, we don't need an agent. We could do this all by ourselves. But there are aspects of an agent that they'll never do by themselves. And I've even seen that happen. They try it, they're on the market, they get their agent who sends them a post and a board in the courier, so they can nail it to their fence outside. Hey presto, I'm doing it all by myself. But what they don't understand is that they will have to do the appointments, do the showing around, understand the game, understand whether that buyer's in a position to proceed or not, and can get locked into something for 3, 4, 5, 6 months with someone that actually has no intention, has no ability to buy. And then they go, well, I better instruct an agent because I'm really buggered up here, and nothing in life is for free. And that's where the problem is. Everybody looks for the life of free.
A cynic would say that actually, in this circumstance, so many agents have been treated so badly when they've been working in these national chains. There's been high-pressure sales techniques pushed onto them. They've been kicked out. So they've gone to tribunals and, you know, that kind of thing. There's many, many stories of maltreatment of individuals in the team. And the better ones probably would have said, well, do you know what, I can just go and do this for myself online. Alternatively, the other argument is that the estate agencies saw an opportunity to do a franchise kind of application, which is basically to make them all self-employed and not actually pay the costs of employing them properly as they should do. And then they've got out and been self-employed and working for a brand and getting presumably the support of that brand. But the reality is that those businesses don't now have the on costs of paying for staff and therefore can run it more cheaply. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot by those two factors, I suspect.
Yeah, so the problem is that it's always been the case. I mean, for starters, any national or large organization obviously has to look at its bottom line. And the bottom line is always reflected on whether the person they've employed is bringing in or is motivated to bring in the sales and the instructions that need to be making that business profitable. The truth of it is that over the years, people have hidden behind the corporations. I know that when I was working for a corporation, and when I've met some people after, it was quite surprising that they were even in the system, because they just never were able to do that. So what happens is, when you've got a volume number of people, so you might have, you know, for example, as with the Halifax, they have 300 odd offices at the beginning. You know, it's impossible to manage those. You bring them down to sort of, you know, regional directors, area directors, and all those sort of people. But in that system, there will always be some people that will hide behind the fact that, you know, not everybody's focused on them. And so they're not particularly good. And the only time you find their true value is when they have been moved on from the company, and they've got to go out there and perhaps go and put food on the plate, or based on the skill that they claim that they have. And I can tell you that I've met many a people that have not been able to do that, because, you know, it's easy to be a manager or a negotiator sometimes within a corporate world and hide behind it. But you're absolutely right that those that are good will either flourish in that operation, or they will leave and set up their own operation, because, you know, there is a line that they can't get past, and there is a hierarchy that they can't get past. So they're going to go sideways and then upwards. They're going to turn around and say, well, actually, I'm going to leave this operation, set up my own, whether it's hybrid, online, or whatever route that they take, and then start to make sure that they can earn their money. If they have the confidence to be able to win the business, they have the confidence to go out there and do it. And this is where all these new structures, the new models, new concepts came along. Franchise operations came along, because people thought, well, actually, you know, I could be part of this whole umbrella, but do my own thing. So they didn't mind taking a franchise operation. And they always take the franchise operation for the area that they have the best knowledge of, the best skill in. And that goes back to my original point, that agency was based on a localized basis. So if someone has a branch in, I don't know, Newcastle, for argument's sake, you know, that person that lives in Newcastle and has bred and knows the knowledge of Newcastle will take the franchise for Newcastle and go, well, actually, I'm still, you know, EXP or whatever they call themselves in Newcastle, because that's the patch I know. So they've got that vehicle to use for their online part, have some support in the back for the system, and then just get out there and do what they're really good at doing, which is actually getting the instructions and getting the business on. Half of them people are not very good at the admin side of things. So that's why the franchise model exists, because salespeople are salespeople. Now, yes, there has been times when people have said, you know, we're hard sell, push sell, and people are coming along and doing this and doing that. But the reality of that business is that if you don't have a salesperson that is good and is motivated to go out and get that, and people feel that they are hard sell, sometimes they've got to be sold to. You know, you've got to hold their hand through that situation. They want it as well, because they need to have it, but they'll complain about it because they feel they're being bulldozed into something. But if they want to sit at home and watch Coronation Street every night and not get on with their life, then don't go to an estate agent, or don't go to your double glazing salesperson. You could do it all online, sitting there with your phone. But the reality is that, you know, we know that people want to be sold to and be part of. And the only thing is that they will moan about it, but then that's natural, isn't it? They moan about it if they got it good, and they moan about it if they got it bad. They don't actually say it's a good thing. Hundreds of years later, they might look like and go, oh, well, actually, that was a really good agent, and we bought this house really well, and, you know, we made good money on it. But they won't pick up the phone and say to that guy, oh, by the way, you know, 25 years ago, I bought a house from you. It's now worth £1 million, but thanks for your guide and advice, because I've now made very good money out of it, and I've been really happy. They'll only tell everybody, oh, yeah, it wasn't that good. It wasn't that good. But reality is, there's a lots of other checklists that people should consider. And that's what we look for at the end of the day. Our next business is only as good as the last business. If recommendation can be done to those that are good at their job, then other people will use us. But if the only thing they can ever say is bad, then that's okay. Then you have to carry on, you know, punching and pushing around to see if you can get the next deal.
The other point to make, of course, is that those people who've got, as we've often said, skin in the game, those people who've paid for the franchise, if you like, or have set themselves up, they've put money in, they're invested in it. Generally speaking, they're a better quality of service. If I think back to my recent experience of using or selecting agents in a particular area, I had three come and see me. The first person to be prompt and on time was the guy that owned the business. And he was the first one to get the suggested valuation back to me. The others who were employed by a company, one rescheduled the appointment and the second one was late and it took them four or five extra days to get the valuation to me. So to me, it's no surprise that the self-employed model is proving more popular with customers, probably because they've got skin in the game.
If you don't have skin in the game in any form or shape, your hunger, your drive, your whole motivation is not going to be there. And it's part of the reason, you know, I came out of corporation stuff because there was always a glass ceiling. You couldn't get past a certain point because there's somebody sitting up there who felt they didn't want you to get past them. So what happens is people like me used to go sideways and then upwards and do your own thing. And that's the case with a lot of the people that you see or speak to that have been successful on the basis that they can do that. And you're absolutely right. The man who's got to actually, you know, put his hand in his pocket at the end of every month to say, you know, I've got to make this happen, is the guy that's going to turn up on time and deliver that service, because it's absolutely paramount to putting that food on the plate for their family. For those that were employed, some will hide behind it. I'm not saying they're all bad. I'm saying that some will just hide behind the fact that it's a job. And others will just turn around and say, well, actually, you know, it's okay. I'll do it tomorrow, manana. Well, you know, if you hesitate, you're gonna lose. So that these are the things. And that's why the agency business has now come complete circle for people that know their area, know their patch, have the knowledge, and have developed a brand which may be under an umbrella, or it may be that they're strong enough to feel that they can do it all by themselves.
So the hybrid agents model we can see on the screen here, and for those on the podcast, I'll just explain so you can see the change year on year. So on properties that were valued at less than 200,000, the drop is 10%. So this is the amount of hybrid agents who have got the business. That's dropped 10%. In the 200 to 350, it's dropped 8%. 350 to a million, 19%. But here's the interesting one. Over £1 million, the hybrid agents dropped 38%, Joe. So clearly, that hybrid model isn't working, that online model isn't working for those that are selling big properties.
Sorry to sound repetitive there, but it goes down to the fact that at the £1 million plus, it requires someone who has local knowledge, understands the market, understands that type of property. Customers that are buying at that level require a personal service so that they can, you know, deal with it in the way that they wish to be dealt with. It's about, you know, the Harrods and the Tesco situation. You know, people want that particular service. They're happy to pay for it and deliver it. And the agents that exist to do that are familiar with those territories, and the top end of the business, there's been so much controversy and newness that has come through. If you listen to and watch these fantastic programs of Channel 4 and Channel 5, where, you know, how they sell £1 million houses and who those agents are, you know, people like to buy into that bling. They want to buy, they want to be bought, they want to be part of that hierarchy. They want to show that they've got the Harrods bag, and even though they bought a pen out there, they want to know that you know, these are the things that matter. So brand awareness matters. That means that you've got to have the brand of the person that knows that market. That's the confidence. And also, I think you'll find that years matter, knowledge wise. You know, it's not always going to be the young person's game. Now, the reason I say that, we know that recently there have been programs and people that have excelled to try and, you know, go town knocking on doors and jumping over garden fences and talking to multimillionaires to see if they can sell their property because they just go, 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 a bit like your apprentice running around town. But the reality is that that's a gimmick. Real agency is not at that level. And even those people that started that realized that, you know, out of 100 people that they might employ, they're only going to get 20 of them that will stay with them that are real. The rest will be short term, you know, gung ho, get the idea and then leave, because it's not easy getting instructions. And even if you're a well-heeled property owner, you are not going to just give the instructions to someone that just jumps over the garden fence and knocks on your door and tells you they're the next thing, best thing since sliced bread. They still want to know that somebody could do the job properly. So skin in the game is very, very important, and knowledge, and especially local knowledge, is very important.
20 EA say that self-employed agents continue to gain momentum year on year, despite hybrid agents continuing to lose market share overall. This downward trend has hidden the growth of the self-employed agent, which is a subgroup of hybrid agents who are demonstrating rapid growth within their sector. And looking at the regional differences here, you can see that in the West Midlands, East Midlands and the centre of the country, that's where the change is at its lowest. Still, a drop of 15% is quite significant. But as you go round the country and in the southeast and the northwest, for example, rates of 20% drop. And then you come down to the northeast, it's dropped as far, and inner London, it's dropped as far as 28% year on year. And in Wales, they really don't like the hybrid agents at all. They've dropped 36%. So that's a third of hybrid agents' business gone in a year. And they're doing that in favour of a traditional estate agent on the high street, or they've gone in favour of a self-employed agent who is obviously, you know, giving them good service. So an interesting debate to a subject to watch and see how it evolves. But there's no doubt about it, things are changing.
When Purple Bricks is probably the biggest name that you can come into hybrid, they came into the market, disrupted it and said, you know, for £1.99, we can sell your house. Well, reality is they went out of business fairly quickly because for £1.99, you can't sell your house. It's not going to be possible. What they do is they just upset the situation. But the annoying thing for me personally, Paul, has always been that the agents don't really value themselves. They don't value their service. They tend to feel that they can drop their fees, drop the whole thing, because their competition is making them drop that. But if they're really good agents, and in London we've seen that, if you're a good agent, you know, people will pay for the service. There's no question about it. It's just that, you know, when the new startups come, there's always one around the corner that's going to say, I'll do it for £1.99 just because I want to get some instructions in. And they feel that they've upset everybody else. And there's this pocket full of the market, which turns around and say, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to go to them because why not, if I could save money? But what they own value is money against time. So they might be on the market with. And so in Wales, why things like the hybrid hasn't happened, I can speak comfortably about Wales at this moment in time, because, you know, from London, I am being called out to Wales, because from Wales, when those people, our properties are not selling, they're not selling for, you know, the fact that they don't have local knowledge. And you do have to have local knowledge. Not that I know local knowledge of Wales, but having gone back and forward, you can start to learn a bit about it. But when you're sitting in the middle of London and sending out a hybrid agent who just puts it on the market through the internet, takes pictures, somebody else goes there, does the picture, somebody else does the floor plan, somebody else does the EPC, you know, you don't actually physically go to the property, you're not going to get any knowledge of that property. And that's why, you know, these places are beginning to sort of think, well, actually, it might be easy, but I'm not selling my property for the next 3-6 months, and I'm missing the boat, and circumstances are becoming awkward. So that's where the local independent, you know, guy who's either got a franchise or knows the local area will do very, very well. And of course, a traditional local estate agent will do very well.
And these figures also indicate, of course, the demise of Purple Bricks during that last year, which is probably having some effect on it as well. But it's good to see the self-employed agent coming to the fore and people voting with their feet by using them. Moving on to our last topic that we got time to quickly discuss. Quite interesting to find that HMOs are back in the news because they're making an increasing percentage of buy-to-let business. This is according to data from specialist lender Shawbrook. In both 2022 and 2023, HMOs made up just a quarter, 27% of all Shawbrook's buy-to-let business. However, as landlords place further emphasis on diversifying their portfolios, this number has already risen to more than a third at 34% in 2024. There's also been a rise in HMO business from non-portfolio landlords from 17 to 21% over the same period. As landlords have dealt with years of challenges, they say, stemming from the pandemic and culminating in the past couple of years of economic uncertainty, HMOs have proved to be a sound strategy for landlords looking to diversify their portfolios, as well as a strong option for non-portfolio landlords entering the market. I'm guessing, Joe, this is because the yields, you know, if you've got one person paying you rent in one property, but if you've got a larger property, you can have six people.
Interesting U-turn for the asylum seekers aspect of it. It's interesting that they've done that fundamentally for a couple of years, that allows the government to house asylum seekers. So the policy really suits the government, then it probably really suits the individual landlords, though landlords have jumped on the bandwagon and said, well, actually, it is better. So if you've got a five, six, seven bedroom property and you're renting the rooms out in there as an HMO, then that is far more lucrative than it is with one. Also, the risk factor is reduced. So if you've got seven people in there and one leaves, you're only losing one seventh of that income as opposed to a whole property income. So, you know, there's more at bite-sized pieces, more people at what I call bite size, you know, but they can afford the room as opposed to, and they're not cheap, by the way, now. The rooms are not cheap. I mean, there was a time when you could go and rent a room with somebody at, you know, £300-£500, inclusive of all sorts of goodies. But now that is almost at £800-£900 itself. It's doubled the money. So it's actually cheaper for people to go and rent a room and share than it is to go and rent their own place, because not only are they renting their own property, but on top of that, they got to pay all the utilities as well, and the council tax and so forth. And before you know it, what is £1,000 becomes £1,400. So it is an attractive part. Yes, and of course, returning yields is very important, because when you're looking to value properties that are rented out, the value of the yield is very, very important. Now, how is yield calculated? Yield is calculated based on the monthly rent against the value of what the property is supposedly worth, so they can see whether that it brings a good return. And to give a small guidance on that, when you've got an interest, a bank base rate at 5.25%, if you go and do a buy-to-let mortgage nowadays, it's at least a couple of percent, maybe 2.5% above base. So you've got to be bringing in, you know, 7.5% net minimum to even stand still, let alone make a profit. And so if you are going to do that, then you need to do a gross income on the yield, probably around 12% at the moment, to make it worthwhile. And if it's not doing that, then it's not going to happen. Now, single flats, single properties, single, you know, lets can be destroyed, because if you've got somebody in there as a family who are only able to pay you £1,200-£1,500 for a house, then that return is not going to be high. But if you've got three bedrooms, a living room and a kitchen and whatever, you put that into three people renting it, all of a sudden at a higher level, you've got a better return. So it makes eminent sense. What they've stopped saying is that they won't do the licensing that is required for HMOs. And mostly that is because a lot of people were housing asylum seekers and felt that they couldn't, you know, didn't need the time or didn't have the time to get the HMO license done with the local authority. So they've done a U-turn. So it's more in reality, it's more for their own benefit than it is. But hopefully it will stay, because it does need to stay. There are people that are looking to rent properties, and they are looking to rent perhaps on the basis of sharing as opposed to individual, because it's about affordability. So no bad thing, but a good thing for buy-to-let landlords to come back into the market.
Yeah, it says here that the rental yields are more easily able to afford the mortgage lending at a higher interest rate, as you've described. And also, the interesting point is the regular turnover of tenants allows the landlord to stay on track with market rents. So the fact that they're maybe only staying 6 months, the rent can go up, of course, and you're not stuck with that problem that you said. You've got the family that have been a good tenant, and you're thinking, I should really put the rent up, but actually, do you know what? I'm glad that I've got no voids.
And it's the void period you've got to have, and as you rightly say, the turnaround, and some people are short term. And that particular model works really well in the cities, especially with youngsters moving with jobs and people coming and going out of the country. It makes all of the right thing. But sometimes out of the country, out of the town, out of, into the countryside, you know, of stability is important. So you might have that one family or that one person in there for a longer period, and you may not be able to turn that around property. A longer void period if someone's moved out and then you haven't found a tenant, even if it's a month, that month could cause you a whole problem of catch up in the rent side of things. So yeah, the model works really well for all the town centres, wherever the communication is the answer to the problem. As long as communication is good, transportation is good, and they can order their Deliveroo from across the road by a delivery guy sitting in the living room, then that's good news for the millennials.
I knew you'd get there eventually. Lovely. There we must leave it, Joe. Thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you again for another Property Matters very soon.